Hello, this is Tom Campbell. Today is August 17, 2019, and I'm talking with Richard, Tim, and Bob Belknap from the Paisleys. Richard, what is your full name, date of birth, and hometown?
Richard Jeffrey Tim, Minneapolis, Minnesota. March 5th, 1941.
And Bob?
Robert John Belknap. Birth date is November 9th, 1949. Hometown, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada.
So, Richard, when did you first get interested in music?
Well, I grew up in a musical family. My mother was a piano and organ teacher. And every week they would have their friends come over and have their sing-alongs, and my mother would play the piano. She had a band in her college days, dance band. So that was my early influence.
And when did you graduate from high school, and where did you go to high school?
I went to high school at Robbinsdale High School, graduated in 1961.
What did you do after high school?
After high school, I earned a football scholarship to go play for the Gophers. I was a member of the Gophers football team in the early 60s.
And I believe you were also in the military service, right?
I was. I was in the Naval Air Reserve in high school. Used to go do my duties out at the old Wold Chamberlain Naval Air Strip out there in Minneapolis. And along came the college then after high school, and was playing for the Gophers, and then my military unit was activated under the 1961 fiasco known as the Berlin Crisis. So my unit was activated. We were sent out to Seattle, where I served out there for a year. Then came back and tried to take my scholarship again and play for the Gophers again. And that team then went on to win the Rose Bowl and the national championship. So that's a nice memory. Then I had to get another year's active duty out of my way, so I decided to go take care of that. Came back in 1965. And while in the military, I learned to play guitar and had several military groups I would play with in bars in Hong Kong and the Philippines and various ports in Japan and on ship. And that was really my calling. When I got out of that, why I went back to the university, moved in on the West Bank, received my associate's degree in recreational leadership in 1967, finally. And then that's when the Paisleys became my life.
Now, I understand you met Bill Smith sometime in late 66?
No, I knew Bill Smith back in high school, and I also knew Bill Smith even before high school. In high school, Bill was in a band called the Furies, and they would play out at the Crystal Coliseum, which was a favorite dance hall hangout for the kids in those days. So I knew Bill was a musician for many years. Well, after high school and everything, we didn't have anything to do with each other. He went on to the university. He went on to get his degree in psychology. When I got out of the military and came back to civilian life, and then re-enrolled at the university, ironically, Bill became my advisor. And so he would advise me as to good classes to take in the humanities and all these other subjects that before I wouldn't even have had an idea existed. Being kind of a jock, you might say, most of my life. And while I was in this band, I started playing in clubs around Minneapolis and joined the union and was playing at a place over on the West Bank called the Triangle Bar in 66, early 66. Lo and behold, Bill Smith comes into the bar along with a couple other old Robbinsdale graduates, and it blew him away to see Dick Tim, the jock, up there on stage. kind of made this amazing transition out of high school. Anyways, one thing led to another, and so Bill and I finally got together over at his place and started jamming. And that's when the Paisleys, the yin-yang, came together.
So you're playing rhythm guitar, Bill Smith is playing keyboards, and you're also writing songs together?
Yes, we both of us previously had been working on our own creativities. And when we got together, as we noticed that, we sort of encouraged each other, and that's when the musical journey on the album was born.
What is the story behind the musical journey?
Well, the musical journey was a compilation of individual pieces that both Bill and myself had written previous. So as we were getting together, we kind of supported that, and we just would move into one song, into another, and we didn't want to quit playing, right? We were feeling so good, and everything was so new. And the creativity just started bubbling out of our souls like chocolate erupting out of a snow cone, you know.
And looking at my notes, in early 67, you meet Rick Youngberg, and you also have a drummer that signs on, right?
Well, as Bill and I were getting together, we had a friend of ours from the university, Paul George. And Paul George was another brilliant young man, very inquisitive, very in the now. At the time, all these social issues were erupting around the campuses. Then we had this military thing with Vietnam, and suddenly all the students were being pressured to either join, or how would they get out of it, being sent overseas to, you know, go fight somebody they didn't even know. And Paul was a real activist, and when he would sit and listen to Bill and I play, he just got very excited because we weren't doing things that the rest of the bands were doing or trying to copy what was being done. We were searching for something new, and we found something very new that made us feel really groovy and really high and excited about it, you know. So Paul George had a lot to do with it. Ultimately, he became sort of like a manager, a mentor behind the scenes, encouraging us to form a band. And at that point, I had met Rick Youngberg previously to Bill and I getting together. I met Rick at an audition over at the university a year or so earlier. I was impressed with Rick's desire. His favorite line was, "Oh, I just want to play those down dirty blues," he says. That's what I want to do. And that kind of stuck in my craw. So when we thought of forming a band, wow, right away Rick kind of popped into my head. And I said, wow, I should give Rick a call. So we did. And Rick came over one night and started jamming. And now the Paisleys become three. At that time, we were already developing enough original material to just go out and do a gig. So we thought, well, okay, if we're going to do that, maybe we should get a drummer. Well, finally we found a young man, Pete's his name, and he says, well, yeah, I'll play with you guys. So we did a couple of gigs at Dania Hall. We rented Dania Hall out on our own up there on the third floor and put on our own dances. We had light shows started to develop.
Who did the light shows?
They were two different light shows that kind of fused. One was by Dick Tatchke, and the other was by Gary Dale. And, of course, they had their associates and helpers. And gosh, at one time at Dania Hall, we had about 15 people up in the overhead balcony shining various lights and projectors and strobe lights and things onto the stage. And this kind of a magical thing just sort of happened. It certainly wasn't planned in any respect. A lot of fun. I believe Pete was with us for about three gigs, and then he decided to join the Army, and they shipped him off to Vietnam.
And who took over on drums?
At that point, we had auditions, and one day we're on the stage, and in marches across the dance floor at Dania Hall, Greg Payton, big Greg Payton, probably 6'3", you know, looked like, you know, Frankenstein walking across the stage. And he gets up behind the drums, and he just starts wailing, and, yep, there's our drummer. And so Greg Payton became the Paisley drummer.
Now, I believe Paul George moved into the role of kind of a manager, right?
Sort of a manager, yeah. More like he didn't really book us, but yeah, he was like the manager go guy. And he had lots of connections at the university. So we used to play a lot of the university anti-war functions, the strikes, you know, all the big gigs around the university. And part of that whole movement that sort of erupted and was catalyzed because of the Vietnam War, which was affecting the young students quite heavily. And most of them, they didn't want to go have to do what they were ordered to do.
Now
I didn't have to face that because I was already a veteran. But Bill didn't, and neither did Paul. Although they did have, you know, there was children on the way for Bill. But at the time, he was married but didn't have children. Paul, of course, did have children.
Now, I understand you had a friend named Clancy Cullen who kind of worked as an equipment manager for the group, and he had a girlfriend, and they started a dance.
Yeah, the Circle Dance, the famed Circle Dance. They just were feeling exuberant, and so they were swinging each other around, and it looked so much fun to one of them that's pretty soon another person came into that twosome, and there were three. And then, before long, there was four. Then there was five. And then this spontaneous thing just sort of developed. And over the years, it became a real ritual for the Paisleys. It was usually the last thing we would play at our gigs, the outside gigs, the big shows. Everybody loved to get into the Circle Dance. I think the largest one I ever saw was at Powderhorn Park, where we're playing out there on the bandstand. And this Circle Dance developed, and it spread out into the ball field accompanying, you know, that's four ball fields big out there. And the whole field was full of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of circle dances just going around. I mean, it was amazing, just amazing. I wonder if somebody has that somewhere. Maybe one of the newscasters has a picture of it, or, you know, somebody probably took movies of it in those days, but I haven't ever seen any.
Did that dance relate to the song Musical Journey?
Well, it was an afterthought to the music. The real music was, you might say, was our attempt at this journey, this spiritual journey, this awakening process that we were experiencing at the time. which was due to many factors coming into play in that period of time. It was a renaissance of knowledge. It was a renaissance, a reawakening of the old and rearranging the old into fit the new, and it was exciting times. Then you had this war thing going on where the whole country was somehow being forced to choose sides here. And it really divided the country because of the way things were handled. Unfortunately, it took about 20 years later when Robert McNamara came out and said, you know, I think those hippies were right. We made some bad decisions. Of course, nobody remembers that. All they remember is, oh, the long-haired hippies. Oh, they're dirty. They're stinky. Oh, they hate this country. Oh, burn your draft cards. It divided people, but we were all fooled.
Now, let's jump to May 1968. The Connie Awards were held to honor local musicians and bands. The Paisleys were nominated in the Best Show Group category, along with 12 other bands. Happy Days took home that award. And the Paisleys were also nominated for Most Promising New Band category. That award went to the Sparklers. Do you remember attending the Connie Awards?
I do not, nor do I recognize the names of those two groups.
Okay. And then in June 68, looking at my notes, it appears that the draft became a big issue and the band decided to move to Canada.
Yes. At that time, Bill had just been married, but he hadn't had children yet. So he was and at that time, we did have a draft policy in this country. And, of course, being academians and being right in the midst of, you might say, the liberal mindset, we were in disfavor of it because it was kind of forced onto people against their will, especially the young. Well, a lot of them rebelled against that. We just happened to find ourselves right in the midst of it. So it was decided Paul and Bill decided the only way that they, Bill at least, could kind of prevent having to be forced into the military or choosing conscientious objector status or being thrown in prison for denying and delaying it, we all decided to move to Canada. And there were, of course, Rick, he didn't have children yet, I don't believe. Did he, Bob?
No. Okay. It's just him and Blossom.
Yeah. And, of course, Rick then was just recently married as well, and he did not want to have to, you know, leave his wife. And so, anyways, it was decided that we would all just kind of sort of migrate to Canada. Now, Paul and Bill, already having their four-year degrees, already had credentials to be admitted on an immigrant status to Canada. I didn't have to worry about that so much, but so they gained immigrant status. The rest of us did not have that. So we got up into Canada and eventually moved to the West Coast through Canada and settled in Vancouver.
Did the band play jobs there?
We did a few gigs. Yep, we did. We played at Simon Fraser University. We played
UBC.
At...
UBC.
Yeah, in BC. What was the other one?
UBC, University of British
University
Columbia.
Of British Columbia. And, you know, there were a couple of other small little places and outdoors, but it certainly was not enough to earn a living for us in Canada, which ultimately did become an issue. At the time, then I started to suffer some eye problems, and I figured, well, I better... Being a veteran, I thought maybe I should go down to Seattle, go to the veterans hospital there and get checked out. So I went down to, went back into Seattle and was diagnosed with an eye, deteriorating eye condition called keratoconus. And that's where the cornea starts to wear real thin. Eventually it'll rupture and you're blind. But fortunately there is a method to give you a corneal transplant, kind of patching that eye just like you would a hole in your jeans, you know. And so eventually I did have to come back to Minneapolis where I had that procedure.
And I believe Greg Payton left the band while in Canada.
Yes, Greg Payton had an illness happen to him, and so he was no longer able to fulfill his duties of playing drums for the group. And so we made a call out to the great creator, and we get this young guy from who just had left a band up there called the Yellow Brick Road, and they had paved this road all the way to the front door of the Paisleys, and Bob Belknap appeared. And and that's how we met Bob, who is sitting next to me now, the illustrious Canadian percussionist.
So, Bob, had you seen the band play live in Canada?
No. My first experience with the band was on Vancouver Island, and Dick, I believe, was working down in Seattle at the time. A friend of mine and I, we were over on Vancouver Island at a big beach called Long Beach, excuse me.
Wreck Bay?
No. Was it Wreck Bay? Could be. Anyhow, all I know is I was there, started to rain, and I ran down to this lean-to driftwood hut and to get protection, get out of the rain, and that was the Paisleys' place of living till their apartments became available. And so we got to talking, and Greg was still there at the time, but he wasn't saying much, so I went over and talked to him for a while, and we compared some notes. But then back in Vancouver, my friend, my buddy that was with me, Jim Todd, got a call from one of the guys in the band, and said that Greg had to go back to St. Paul, and would I be interested in auditioning? So I did, and eventually was taken on. And I know we did a lot of frat houses, frat parties at the University of British Columbia, and we did a few other gigs. One most memorably was at the Bistro, 4th Avenue Bistro, which was right in the heart of the hip area of Vancouver. And we thought we were having a great time because we were tripping. And we afterwards got reports back from spouses, et cetera, and friends that said, no, you guys shouldn't do that. So I never did that again. But it was pretty easy to get caught up in your own music. But so we did some jobs, and then Dick had to get back for his eye. And Bill was there, but Bill's wife was pregnant at this time, so she wanted to stay up there. So I stayed with Bill, and Bill worked out a number of songs with me just drumming on my snare drum and my hi-hat and in his apartment, and did that through, I think, till February.
Of what year now?
That would be 69. So I met the guys in 68. And I believe their apartments became available in Vancouver in September of 68. And that's when I started working with them. And I'm not sure what month you ended up coming back, Dick, but I think it was November. I'm not sure.
I don't remember the months. All I remember is I had that weighing on my mind. And I forgot about having to work down at Boeing while I was down in Seattle.
Yeah. I remember
or
that.
Everett, Washington.
Everett, yeah.
Yeah, I worked on for Boeing down there in the new building that built the very first 747. And I actually worked about 70 feet up in the air on these girders, making the fuselage support for the workers to put the plane together. And so I'd have to get up there real early in the morning and go dangling down there and bolt things together. And yeah, it was quite a trip working for Boeing. It was kind of like the military.